is the place for me.
When that first London summer hit Galahad, he began to feel so cold that he had to get an overcoat. Moses laughed like hell. You're warm in the winter and cold in the summer, eh? Ha! Well, it's my turn now to put on my light suit and cruise about. But for all that, Galahad getting on well in the city. He had a way. Whenever he talking with the boys, he using the names of the places like they mean big romance, as if to say, I was in Oxford Street, have more prestige than if he just say, I was up the road. Boy, when he say, Charing Cross, when he realized that is he, Sir Galahad, who going there. Just to say Charing Cross have a lot of romance in it. Lord, that is life for you. That is it. To meet a craft there and take she out someplace. What you think, Moses? Ah, in you I see myself. How I was when I was new to London. All them places is like nothing to me now. It's like when you're back home and you hear fellas talk about Times Square and Fifth Avenue, Charing Cross and Gay Paris. You say to yourself, Lord, them places must be sharp. Then you get a chance and you see them for yourself, and it's like nothing. But Galahad feel like a king living in London. The first time he take a craft out, he dress up good. For one of the first things he do after he get a night walk was to stock up with clothes like stupidness, as if to make up for all the hard times when he didn't have nice things to wear. So, cool as a lord, the old Galahad walking out with plastic raincoat hanging on the arm and eyes not missing one sharp craft that pass, bowing his head in a polite good evening and not giving a blast if they answer or not. It's one of those summer evenings when it looked like night would never come. A magnificent evening. Rent finished paying, rations in the cupboard, £20 in the bank, and a nice piece of skin waiting under the big clock in Piccadilly Tube Station. Mummy, look at that black man. A little child holding on to the mother's hand look up at Sir Galahad. You mustn't say that, dear, the mother chide the child. But Galahad's skin like rubber at this stage. He bend down and pat the child cheek, and the child cower and shrink and begin to cry. What a sweet child, Galahad say, putting on the old English accent. What's your name? But the child mother uneasy. She pulled the child along and she look at Galahad and give a sickly sort of smile. And the old Galahad, knowing how it is, smile back and walk on. If that episode did happen around the first time when he land up in London, oh Lord, he would have run to the boys, telling them he have big ballad. But at this stage, Galahad like duck back when rain fall, everything running off. Though it used to have times when he lay down there on the bed in the basement room in the water, and all the experience like that come to him. And he say, Lord, what it is we people do in this world that we have to suffer so? What it is we want that white people find it so hard to give? A little work, a little food, a little place to sleep. We not asking for the sun or the moon. We only want to get by. We don't even want to get on. And Galahad would take his hand from under the blanket as he lay there, studying how the night before he was in the lavatory and two white fellas come in and say how these black bastards have the lavatory dirty. And they didn't know he was there. And when he come out, they say, hello, mate, have a cigarette. And Galahad watched the collar of his hand and talked to it as if it's a person, saying, collar, is you that causing all this misery in the world? It's not me, it's you. It's not we the people don't like. Is the collar black? Look at you. You're so black and innocent. And this time so, you're causing misery all over the world. Anyway, all thought like that out of Galahad's mind as he out on this summer evening, walking down the Bayswater Road on his way to the circus. He go into the gardens, and Galahad Esquire strolling through, 3-4 pounds in the pocket, sharp clothes on. Lord, oh Lord, going to meet a first-class craft that waiting for him in the circus. Always, from the first time he went there to see Eros and the lights, that circus have a magnet for him. That circus represent life. Every time he go there, he have the same feeling like when he see it the first night. Drink Coca-Cola. Anytime is Guinness time. A million flashing lights, the wide doors of theaters, people sitting and standing and walking and talking and laughing, and Galahad Esquire in all this, standing there in the big city in London. Oh, Lord. He went down the steps into the station, and Daisy was dressed up plenty. She looked real sharp in a colored pattern dress, which looked pretty. And when he was coming up, he noticed the trim legs and the straight lines of the nylons and the high heel shoes. He walked up behind her and put his hands over she eyes. And that evening, people in the tube station must be bawled to see a black man so familiar with a white girl. But Galahad feeling too good to bother about the loud tones in them people's eyes. Tonight is his night. Daisy move his hands and say, "Oh, it's you." And she looked a little embarrassed, but Galahad didn't notice. They went to the hippodrome that showing the gladiator, starring Victor Mature, and Galahad feeling good with this piece of skin walking with him. After the picture, they went to a restaurant and eat a big meal, and Galahad buy a bottle of French wine, telling the waiter to bring the best. The summer night descend with stars. They walking hand in hand, and Galahad feeling hearts. "It was a lovely evening," Daisy began. "Come and go in the yard," Galahad say. "What?" Daisy say. "The yard, where I live in." Daisy start to hesitate, but he make haste and catch a number 12, telling she that it's on the way home. When they hop off by the water, she was still getting on prim, but Galahad know was only grand charge, and besides, the old blood getting hot. So he walked Daisy brisk down the road, and she quiet as a mouse. "It was battle royal in that basement, man," he tell Moses afterwards. And he went on to give a lot of detail, though all of that is nothing to an old veteran like Moses. It's only to Galahad is new, because it's the first time with a white number. Moses smile a knowing smile. "Take it easy," he tells Sir Galahad. It had one bitter season, winter, when it looked like the vengeance of Moko fall on all the boys in London. Nobody get any work. Fellas who had work, losing it. And all over the place, it looked like if Operation Pressure gone into execution in a big way. Galahad, for one, loses work. And though it was winter, a real grim one with pipes bursting, the old Galahad not very much affected by the weather. Some miracle of metabolism was still keeping him warm, as he was able to walk about the streets when normal people rattling with cold, in an ordinary suit of clothing. Fellas put him down for mad. Some of them stare at this spade who defying the elements as if he's a witch doctor. That particular winter, things were so bad with him that he had to try and catch a pigeon in the park to eat. It does have a lot of them flying about, and the people does feed them with bits of bread. Watching these fat pigeons strut about Kensington Gardens, the thought come to Galahad to snatch one and take it home and roast it. Once the idea come to his head, he begin to go to the park regularly to study pigeon life and plan out a strategy. Galahad wasn't so much frightened of the idea of the snatch as what would happen if one of them animal-loving people see him. That thought made him shiver, and the morning he was in action, he looked around carefully to make sure nobody near. "Coo, coo," Galahad say, throwing bread and leaning on the rail. The pigeons say, and they start to flutter around as Galahad throw bread. Galahad eye a fat fella who edging up to the railing. He start to drop bread a little nearer until the bird was close. He made the snatch so quietly that the other pigeons only flutter around a little and went on eating. He started to swing the pigeon around, holding it by the head, for he wanted to kill it quick and push it in his pocket. Just as Galahad swinging the pigeon, one of them old geezers, who does always wear a fur coat, come through the entrance with little Flossie on a lead to give the little deer a morning constitution. And as soon as Flossie spot the spade, she start a sharp barking. "Oh, you cruel, cruel beast," the woman say, and Galahad head fly back from where he kneeling on the ground to handle the situation better. "You cruel monster, you killer." Galahad blood run cold. He see the gallows before him right away, and he push the pigeon in his jacket pocket and stand up, the pigeon still fluttering in the pocket. "I must find a policeman," the woman screech. And as she turned back to the road, Galahad make races through the park, heading down for Lancaster Gate. Now, when Galahad did reach back home, and he sit down and start to pick the bird feather, he start to feel guilty. All he tried to argue with himself that he only do it because he hungry and things brown. Still, the feeling that he do a bad thing wouldn't leave him. "What the hell I care," he say to himself. "So much damn pigeon all about the place. What the hell happen if I snatch one to eat?" But when he finished plucking the pigeon, conscience humbugging him so much that he fling it in a corner. Little later, he thought about Moses. "Moses in this country long," he said to himself. "And if he could eat it, I don't see why I must feel so guilty." So he went round by Moses, and he tell Moses all what happened. "Boy, you take a big chance," Moses say. "You think this is Trinidad? Them pigeons there to beautify the park, not to eat. The people over here will kill you if you touch a fly." But all the same, the old Moses eyeing the bird, and it's a nice fat one. "Well, clean it and cut it up," he say. "I will put the rice on to boil. But you mustn't do this kind of thing again. You will get in big trouble." "The old geezer called me a cruel monster," Galahad say. "If you did see she face, you would think I commit a murder. You're lucky they didn't catch you. It's a long time I ain't eat pigeon, boy," Galahad say. "Pigeon meat, really sweet," Moses say. In about an hour, they were eating pigeon and rice, Galahad sucking the bones and smacking his lips. "You have a cigarette?" he asked Moses when he finished. The pigeon and rice have Moses feeling good, and he in the mood for an old talk, and he and Galahad sit there, belly full with pigeon, smoking cigarette and talking about them characters back home.
And tomorrow, in the final part of The Lonely Londoners, as summer comes to the city, Moses' friend Harris organises a dance, and Moses contemplates his life after 10 years in London. And you might like to know that after the weekend at this time, following on from The Lonely Londoners, we've the first part of Colin McInnes's vibrant novel Absolute Beginners, which is set just a couple of years later as racial tensions rise. Together, the two books offer an unforgettable portrait of a city and a society undergoing convulsive change. And of course, you'll be able to find both of those on BBC Sounds. BBC Radio 4 Extra presents Faust, a reworking of the classic tale of a man who sells his soul to the devil. The starry cast includes Mark Gatiss as Mephistopheles and Julian Rhyne-Tutt as Faust. In this darkly comic adaptation, the man and the demon begin their Faustian pact.
"Please allow me to introduce myself. Mephistopheles is the name."
"You gave me a fright. How did you get in here? What is your business?"
"A devil out of hell is who I am. No ordinary devil either, I like to think. I can't open my wings in here. I'd take your knick-knacks off the shelves just like that. But you'll have to believe me, they're very impressive. Grey-blue tinted iron feathers beaten so thin they ripple as the hot air rises from the oven.
I asked about your business.
I have a certain license from my master. He extends me privileges, the right to roam up here, to observe and be diverted as I see fit, provided, naturally, there's something in it for him at the end of the day.
You knew I tried calling up spirits.
Of course. I was out on the prowl, looking for some diversion when I heard your summons. As soon as I saw you, I knew I'd found just what I needed to keep me entertained for a while.
Mark Gatiss and Julian Rhine-Tutt star in Faust, starting next Monday night at 9:45 on Radio 4 Extra and BBC Sounds.
This is
BBC Radio 4
Extra.
It's 7:30. Good morning from me, David Miles, with humour right through to 10. In a moment, there's a sermon on the rocks for the unbelievers of the Isles of Scilly. Warmington-on-Sea is our destination after that for the very first Dad's Army for Radio, which finds Captain Mannering assembling his motley crew for the Home Guard at 8. Then we're heading down under to the remote Australian town of Kalangadog Junction, where Dr. Thomas has no patience but an invitation to judge a baby contest at 8:30. And now we continue our 1930s comedy set on the remote Scilly Island of St. Martin's, just before the Second World War, where Father Tregarthen is enlisting the help of an unlikely source to help him with his irreligious parishioners.
Heading the wrong way for church, Mr. Trenier.
That's the idea, Reverend.
But you need to pray to make amends.
I got work once doing. And anyway, don't reckon I got too much to make amends for.
We're all sinners, Tommy.
Well, you too.
Though you're clearly a greater sinner than me.
Say a prayer for me. How about that?
I will not.
If I only sinned a little bit since Sunday last, maybe the good Lord might not.
On BBC Radio 4.
Why have we stopped?
High drama, Mr. Beam.
Available now on BBC Sounds. This is
BBC Radio 4
Extra.
Next, we have the final chapter of Sam Selvon's classic 1956 novel about the lives of a group of Caribbean immigrants in London. As summer arrives, Moses' friend Harris organises a dance, and Moses contemplates his life after 10 years in the capital. With language of the time, Don Warrington reads The Lonely Londoners.
Is the place for me.
Oh, what a time it is when summer come to the city, and all them girls wearing light summer frocks, and you could course a lime in the park and negotiate 10 shillings or a pound with the sports. Everywhere you turn, the English people smiling. Isn't it a lovely day? As if the sun burn away all the tightness and strain that was in their faces. Don't ever be surprised at who you meet up cruising and reclining in the park. It might be your boss, or it might be some big professional fella, because it may have no discrimination in the park. Summer does really be hearts. Every year, the ranks augmented with fresh blood. Lately, in view of the big set of West Indians that storm in Britain, it have a lot of dark women who in the racket. It have some white fellas who feel it's a big thrill to hit a black number, and the girls does make them pay big money. But as far as spades hitting spades, it have nothing like that, for a spade wouldn't hit a spade when it have so much other talent on parade. People wouldn't believe you when you tell them the things that happen. The cruder you are, the more the girls like you. They don't want you to play la-di-da or try to be polite and civilized. They want you to live up to the films and stories they hear about black people living primitive in the jungles of the world. That is why you will see so many of them African fellas in the city with scar on their face and a ferocious expression, going about with some real sharp chicks. One night at a party in Knightsbridge, bags of women and fellas drinking champagne. Moses sit wondering how the English feel they can't get big thrills unless they have a black man in the company. And when Moses leave, they push 5 pounds in his hand and say, "That was a jolly good show." That is life. That is London. "Oh, Lord," Galahad say, when the sweetness of summer get in him. He would never leave the old Britain as long as he live. And Moses sigh a long sigh, like a man who live life and see nothing at all in it, and who frighten as the years go by, wondering what it is all about. One Saturday, Moses' friend Harris was giving a dance in St. Pancras Hall. He is a fella who liked to play la-di-da. He liked English customs and thing. Harris moving among the big shots because of the work he does do, which is to organize little fetes like dance and party and so on. And when he dress, bowler and umbrella and briefcase tucked under the arm, with the Times fold up in the pocket so the name show, only thing, Harris face black. On the Saturday of the fete, there Harris is, standing up by the door in black suit and bow tie, greeting all the English people with a pleasant good evening and how do you do, and a not so pleasant greeting for the boys. For if one thing he afraid is that the boys make rab and turn the dance into a brawl. Moses arrives. Behind him, Tolroy appear with an English chick, and after him, Ma and Tanti. "Harris!" Tanti scream out. "You don't remember neighbor who used to live behind you in George Street?" I'm afraid, Harris start to stammer. "But look how big the boy get," Tanti bawl. "When I hear that is you, little Harris, who used to run about the barrack yard in shirt tail, who given this fate, I say I must come and see you. Ma, look at little Harris how big he get." "Yes, yes, I remember you," Harris say quickly, giving Tanti a push. But Tanti didn't budge. "Don't push," she say. "Have some respect for your elders. I'm not going to dance until you come inside. I want the first set with you. It still have some life in the old hen." Inside the hall was a real jam session. The girls stand up in groups here and there, and the boys liming out by the bar. And Moses, as usual, like a minor master of ceremonies with the boys, giving them ballad as they coast a drink. "All you see that?" Moses say. "Look, Tolroy bring the whole family to Harry's fate. Oh, God, what it coming to now? Tolroy!" And when Tolroy come, all the boys begin to give him tone. "What happened? You couldn't leave the old lady home? You think this is Jamaica? You bring an old hen to dance?" All this time, the steel band blasting some hot numbers and Harris moving about the crowd, saying hello to everybody. It really looked like he have some white laddie da there, for it have 4 of them sitting at a table in the corner drinking, but none of them dancing. Harris make his way to the table. "How are you getting on?" ask one of the young women, like an attendant when you're trying on a new pair of shoes. He feel it was up to him to ask the thing to dance, seeing like they look shy to take the floor. She hem a little, then she get up. Now, all this time, Tanti was looking for Harris. And when he take the floor with this sharp thing, Tanti get up and push away dancers as she advanced to Harris. "My boy," she say, putting she hand on his shoulder, "I've been looking for you all over. What happened? You're avoiding the old lady, eh? Too much young girl here to bother with Tanti, eh?" Harris say, "Will you kindly wait until I'm finished? We shall dance the next set." "You're too smart. When the next set come, I wouldn't find you," Tanti say. "Tell this girl to unlace you. These English girls don't know how to dance calypso, man. Lady, excuse him." And before Harris know what happening, Tanti swing him in the center of the floor, swinging she fat bottom, left and right. It had a fella there called 5 past 12. A Tess look at him one day. "Boy, you black like midnight. Then, after a second look, no, you more like 12:05. 5 was real high. A look in his eyes as if he's seeing things men does only see in their dreams. But he was quick enough to see the white girl standing up there helpless while Tanti take Harris away. Before the girl had time to make her way back to the table, she was in Five's arms, and he was close-hauling this number like if the band playing a slow, sentimental fox instead of "Fan me, Saga boy, fan me." Half the boys saying, "Look how Tanti have Harris," and the other half saying, "Look at the old Five beating close to the wind with Harris girl." Afterwards, Five went over to Moses and Galahad, who talk at the bar. Soon, Harris joined them as if nothing happened and order a drink. Harris worry about Five smoking weed and make rab. When the fed finish and the band playing "God Save the Queen," Harris say, forgetting to speak proper English for a minute, "Some of you have a habit of walking about as if the fed's still going on. The English people will say we are still uncivilized and don't know how to behave properly. So please, boys, do me a favor. Remember, when the band play "God Save the Queen," stand up to attention." Nearly every Sunday morning, like if they're going to church, the boys liming in Moses' room, coming together like if it's confession, sitting down on the bed, on the floor, on the chairs, everybody asking, "What happening?" Laughing, asking Moses if he have anything to eat, the gas going low, and everybody turning out their pockets for this shilling that would mean the difference between shivering and feeling warm. Until conscience hit one of them and he say, "Apps, look, I have a shilling. It was right down in the bottom of my trouser pocket." Sometimes, listening to them, he look in each face and he feel a great compassion for every one of them, as if he live each of their lives one by one and all the strain and stress come to rest on his shoulders. Sometimes, after they're gone, he hear their voices ringing in his ear, and sometimes tears come to his eyes, and he don't know why, really. If it's homesickness, or if it's just that life in general beginning to get too hard. 10 years, the old man in Britain, and what to show for it? What happened during all that time, from winter to winter, summer to summer, work after work, sleep, eat, hustle pussy, work? And a look come in his face that bring all the years of suffering to light. London is a lonely, miserable city. Nobody does really accept you. I want to go back to Trinidad and lay down in the sun and dig my toes and eat a fish broth and go Maracas Bay and talk to them fishermen, and all day long I sleeping under a tree with just the old sun for company. Every year he vowing to go back. But after the winter and then the old sun shining, it's as if life start all over again. I will wait until after the summer. The summer does really be hard. But he know it reached that stage where he gets so accustomed to the pattern that he can't do anything about it. He used to wonder about back home, where he have a grandmother and a girlfriend who always writing him why he don't come back, that they would go and live in Grenada where her father have a big estate. "Why you don't go back to Trinidad? What happening, man? What happening?" One night, liming on the embankment near to Chelsea, Moses stand up on the bank of the river, watching the lights of the buildings reflecting in the water, thinking he should try to make it back by next year before he change his mind again. Under the kif-kif laughter, behind the ballad and the episode, the what happening, the summer is hard, he could see a great aimlessness, a great restless, swaying movement that leaving you standing in the same spot, as if a forlorn shadow of doom fall on all the spades in the country, as if, on the surface, things don't look so bad. But when you go down a little, you bounce up a kind of misery and pathos and a frightening what. He don't know the right word, but he have the right feeling in his heart as if the boy's laughing, but they're only laughing because they're afraid to cry. They're only laughing because to think so much about everything would be a big calamity. Like how he here now, the thought's so heavy, like he unable to move his body. Still, it have a greatness and a vastness in the way he was feeling tonight. Like it was something solid after feeling everything else give way. And though he ain't getting no happiness out of the cogitations, he's still pondering. For it's the first time that he ever find himself thinking like that. One of the boys was telling him how over in France, all kinds of fellas writing books were turning out to be bestsellers. Taxi driver, porter, road sweeper, it didn't matter. One day you're sweating in the factory, and the next day, all the newspapers have your name and photo, saying how you are a new literary giant. He watched a tugboat on the Thames, wondering if he could ever write a book like that, what everybody would buy. It was a summer night. Laughter fell softly. It was the sort of night that if you wasn't making love to a woman, you feel you was the only person in the world like that.